Hello, everybody, and welcome to the bestoprods.com video games podcast. I almost said movies. So, today's podcast is always this podcast brought to you by a fuck ton of sponsors, but today we are brought to you by Zazzle. Zazzle's mission is to enable every custom on-demand product in the world on their platform. You'll be able to go on there, upload your own design, anything on any product you want, and make it. They are a really great service, really customizable products at really good prices. So head over to Zazzle.com, like the link in the bottom page or any of the banners on the site for Zazzle, and check out some awesome customizable products and make some stuff of your own. Speaking of making stuff, we could use some stuff. Head over to DestoProducts.com/store, where we're in the final days of our Starving Artist sale. Excuse me. We are currently trying to get to the bare minimum payout amount for Spreadshirt before we move over to our new store. So that we'll be able to pay our artists so they'll be more willing to go back into the slave pit. So the sale ends on Friday when we will be launching our new store. So you have until then to save on all these products that we have. And as always, we are looking for new art and designs for products. So if you have some stuff you think we would like, specifically art, then please don't hesitate to send it our way to bobby1@destoprods.com or post it in the t-shirt design thread on the forums. If you have a design idea, we'd love to hear from you, but unfortunately, we wouldn't be able to pay you if we used it. If you have art, we will be able to pay you. So, I'm your host, the Dead Man. Today we have Bobby1.
Hello.
And the Onceist.
Hello.
So yeah, me first. Cause fuck it, I don't care. I've been on a going first thing for a while now, and I like it. So fuck it. Next week, like for the next run of podcast, I'll be going last. But I just want to go first today. So
that's cool.
Cause fuck all y'all.
All right.
So first up, I've been playing some Antechamber. So this is a very bizarre game. So it was made by one guy, an Australian guy, I believe. I think his name's Alex something. I can't remember his last name. Sorry, Alex. But anyway, so he sent me this game as for review. I believe, a little over halfway through it now. And it's insane. So you guys know Portal, right?
Yep.
So imagine if they took out all the humor from Portal and then took all their effort from the humor and put it into the puzzles.
And made it look trippy as hell.
Yeah, this game is insane looking. It's like for the most part, when you're just like walking around the beginning, it just kind of looks like, you know, matte white and stuff. But then it eventually gets to the point where like the colors are constantly shifting. Sometimes they're like alternating between black and white, looking really weird and shit.
Yeah, and just like extremely incredible messed up geometry patterns.
Yeah, it is non-Euclidean geometry.
Meaning
that it doesn't adhere to any physical law. So like at the beginning of the game, you're just a something walking along. We have no idea what you are. There's pretty much no story in this game. As you're just walking along, they come across a giant pit with a big sign that says jump. You try to jump, you fall. But fortunately, there is no damage you can take in this game at all, so you're just okay, fine. And you walk along, you end up going back up to that place, and then it says walk. And so you walk across, and you're able to just walk across. A floor forms underneath you. If you jump, then that floor disappears, and you just fall again. Yeah, it is really bizarre in just the... I have no idea how this guy did it, but he managed to just figure out a way to work the Unreal Engine to just have its own insane and messed up forms of geometry and physics, which are awesome. And throughout the game, you find these little like square things that have like little chalk drawings on them that when you click them, they like give you some message that at first glance, it sounds like something out of a really bad like self-help book.
That's awesome.
But when you look at it, it actually is giving you instructions how to play the game. There's one room where you're going down. There are two paths splitting off. You go down one side. You start going around entirely in circle forever. Like you find something, it says like making the wrong choice can sometimes have you going around in circles forever. Yeah, and the only real game-y part of it was, you know, the puzzle solving, but also the use of some kinds of physics guns. So there are, I believe, from what I've seen, three guns. I only have the first two. So the first one is, so all these guns, what they do is they, you're able to absorb, or like suck in blocks with them, and then shoot out those blocks again to make like platforms and switches and like blocking off paths for lasers so you can get into places better and easier. So the first one is just, you know, single suck, single shoot. Then the second one, is like a stream one where you're able to absorb a huge stream of them, get like the line of these things, and then also shoot out a line of them. But if you shoot it, like the wrong direction, you'll end up dissolving some of the blocks. It's kind of hard to explain. That's the thing with this game. It's very hard to explain to someone who isn't there playing it. Because, like I said, there is no adherence to any real physical law with this, except gravity happens. You know, if you jump, you will fall back down.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so it's hard to explain to someone who isn't just sitting there watching you play it or actually playing it themselves, because while the geometry and physics don't make sense to, like, in practical senses, once you get in there and start messing with them, you are able to figure them out pretty quickly and are able to actually work around them and figure out how the world works within the game. Which is nice, but with a game like this, it could easily just devolve into no one understands what the hell is going on because you have so much mess of physics, but it's managed to have really interesting and confusing physics that when you play them, they make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and their style is really cool too. Like, it looks mostly voxel based. Which, for those who don't know, voxel is a 3D pixel. Like, because most of it's all just like weird square things, except when you get the gun, then that's all done. Like, but then that, yeah, that can be kind of voxely if it's like really small ones and done all that. But then you eventually get to the point where everything just looks really polygonal, where you go into a museum thing and all of a sudden there's these things that are like weaving in and out of each other. There's like weird giant like demon stag statue. It just comes the fuck out of nowhere. There's a giant face with like hands all over it and shit.
Epic.
Yeah, it is a really fun game. It's really, but I have a feeling that for a lot of people, they may not be able to get into it because there's not a great sense of direction. Like, honestly, I have no idea what my actual goal is in this game. I'm just kind of going whatever direction I can go without like looping back on myself, running up in a like permanent circle.
Yeah, usually when I play games, I just tend to look at the pretty graphics.
Yeah, the game does look good. It's very, very like barren and like bare bones and things, but it does look great.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there's really no sense of direction. The map screen is kind of a joke because like with the map screen, the one good thing that it has is it has like a fast travel system where you just hit escape and you're taken back to this room where there's a map screen. There's all the things you found so far, and you just go and you're able to like look at the map. Select a room and click on it and travel immediately to that room, which is nice. But then you'll end up like just like trying to solve a puzzle and turning back around and then going in and going to a different room and then hitting escape and you realize that you're in like the exact opposite end of the place where you were supposed to go. So yeah. It would be nice if they gave you a bit more direction, like specifically where you're supposed to go. Every once in a while, like a little arrow would pop up saying, hey, go that way. But they're few and far between, and it's barely a direction. The Antichamber. Review will be up some point, hopefully, this week. I'm expecting to give it somewhere around a 4.
Out of 5. Yeah.
We use a 5 scale here.
Awesome.
The Antichamber. You should definitely check it out. It might still be on sale on Steam, but if not, I think it's only like 20 bucks, like 15 or 20 bucks. So it's not that bad. Yeah, so moving on to Mass Effect 3. I don't think it's more of that, and I came across a mission that really kind of messed me up. So I'm working with Tali and the Quarians. And I'm also working with the Geth AI, who I'm just going to call Legion because he's pretty much as Legion. Because he has multiple personalities, because he has multiple consciousnesses in one body, and he refers to himself as we, not the royal we. Actually, there are multiple people inside of him. Don't read too much into that. And so, yeah, this mission, what's happening is I am inside, like, the Geth hive mind, and I'm trying to destroy the Reaper influence on them. And then, when I do that, I have a choice. I can either, A, upgrade all of the Geth so that they'll be able to withstand Reaper control, but it will also wipe out the entire Quarian race. Or B, not upgrade the Geth so that the Quarians will wipe them out, destroying the entire Geth race, but the Quarians will survive.
Huh.
Yeah. Hmm. So I made the choice of giving the Geth the upgrades. And when I did that, Tally killed herself.
Oh, no.
Monster!
I know, dude! I don't know! It's... And a really great thing, it didn't give me Paragon or Renegade. It just gave me Reputation. Which is something I've noticed. I'm not sure. I don't think they actually had it in Lame Aspect 2 or 1, but I have noticed in this one a lot that when you make a choice on something, you don't actually get... for a lot of things, when you make choices on them, you don't actually gain, like, Paragon or Renegade. You actually just gain Reputation.
Just makes you known.
Yeah, so it makes me known, but it doesn't exactly give me... But it doesn't make me known as, like, a benevolent person or an evil person. It just makes me known.
Yeah.
Actually, the more I think about it, I think your decision to save the Geth was, it was a good call.
Yeah, like, with this game, it's all about, like, building your military force, and I'm guessing that the Geth will add, like, more power to my military force. But still, dude, Tali's dead! She took off her mask and then just fell off a cliff.
That's terrible.
On her home planet.
By the way, thanks for telling me stuff from two games in the future. That's okay. Yeah, I've hardly found time to play Mass Effect, so it's going to take me a huge amount of time before I get there.
Yeah. Yeah, oh man, it sucks so much, because just previously, so all was happening on the Quarian's home planet. Like, the Quarians are actually, like, nomad people who live in their flotillas and stuff, but they had a planet once. This was their planet. We had just destroyed a Reaper without the use of a giant, without the use of the weird things from under the water or using the mother of Thresher Maws. We just blew it the fuck up. And so then Tally's like, oh man, we destroyed a Reaper by ourselves. It was awesome. And then I wiped out our entire race. So, kind of a mixed bag. I made the argument, like, really early on in the game that it didn't feel as personal because, you know, there wasn't any loyalty missions where we get to learn more about these characters or anything. But getting more into it, my god, this fucking game made me feel so bad.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, finally, I played some Persona 4 or the Arena. So, Persona 4 Arena, woo!
Yeah, Persona.
No one cares.
And well, so I've played 4. It before. What do you think of it?
I like it. It's got interesting mechanics in it. So, for those that don't know, this is a game that is actually, that actually does serve as a sequel to Persona 4. There's actually, like, a really bizarre story mode in it that's kind of like a visual novel that mixed with a fighting game.
Amazing.
Yeah, so it's set 2 months after the events of Persona 4. You had your character, who is now called you and not the protagonist, goes back to Inaba to celebrate Golden Week. Once he gets back there, the Midnight Channel, which is... So for those who don't know the story of Persona 4, a kid moves in with his uncle after his parents go away for business for a year. And so he starts going to school, he makes some friends there, and then when he's there, he discovers something called the Midnight Channel, which is some rumor that was going around the town, where if you look into a turned-off TV at midnight when it's raining, you will see your soulmate. Turns out, actually, if you look into a turned-off TV at midnight when it's raining, you will see a person who's about to be murdered. Yeah. You and your friends discover this, and then you also discover that you have the ability to go inside the TV.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, so once you go in there, you're able to summon these things called Persona, and use them to fight evil things called Shadows in order to save the people who are thrown inside the TV to keep them from getting murdered. So you do all that, you save everyone, everything's all hunky-dory, and the Midnight Channel stops broadcasting.
Did you just say hunky-dory?
Yes. I just said hunky-dory, motherfucker.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so you save the people, you do anything, your cousin dies and comes back to life. It's very tragic. And then you leave. Now, 2 months later, you come back and you discover the Midnight Channel is back on. But instead of showing somebody about to be murdered, they are instead advertising a fighting tournament and giving everyone really weird names. Like, for the main character, his name's like, No One Touches the Precious Donico, the Sister Complex Kingpin of Steel. Yeah, and Chie, who's one of my favorite characters, she's like the carnivore. She's like a spunky dragon with deadly legs, the carnivore who's abandoned her womanhood. Which, I don't even know, dude. It's so weird. And so yeah, then you're just in this game, you just go into the TV, you start learning all these things, you start fighting like your friends because someone who's dressed up as Teddy cosplaying as M. Bison is now controlling everything. And making you hear your friends differently, so they hear them insulting you and like trying to goad you on to fight, but they are hearing the same thing, and so then you fight, and then you just go on. It's a bizarre game, and it's really confusing to talk about the story to people who don't know what the story is for Persona 4.
All I know about the story is when I saw Persona 4 the animation, which was like 2 episodes.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, but the weirdest thing about the story is hearing the main character talk. Because I spent hundreds of hours with Persona 4. I've already started my next 100 hours with the game because I'm going to be rewatching the playthrough that I've watched a few times. Because it's awesome. But anyway, for 400, 500 hours, I have never heard that guy talk. And then he's all of a sudden talking. And it's really confusing to hear him talk again, to hear him talk like at all. What's even weirder is when they actually get into the story, anytime anybody talks, like they have a portrait on screen of them for whoever who's talking, and their mouths actually move. Like not in sync with it, they just flap up and down when someone's talking and then close when they stop talking. I was really weird with that, but anyway, I'm supposed to actually talk about the fighting. So the fighting is pretty good. It's a 4-button system with regular attacks, persona attacks. The regular attacks you have strong and weak, and then persona attacks you have strong and weak. But what's kind of cool is if you're hit with an attack while attacking with your persona actually takes damage. What the fuck is that?
Hello. Let's continue.
Yeah, so your persona actually takes damage. Your persona takes 4 hits, then you actually are not able to fight with him anymore for a period of time as he charges up again, which is kind of cool because persona attacks are pretty powerful attacks, and if you like use them just frivolously and don't actually put any thought into them, you can actually lose the ability to use them for a while, which can really fuck you up in combat. But the most interesting thing is the 1-hit KO attack. So if you're in the game point match of if it's the best out of three, either you have 1 win or both of you have 1 win, then if you have 100 SP, which is like your super meter, you are then able to just do 1 attack and defeat your opponent. Like no ifs, ands, or buts. You can have full health, full everything. You still beat him in 1 hit. And it's really weird. Because I'm guessing with a lot of people, they'll think it's imbalanced or something. But when I play it, it's from what I've played of it, it is blockable. It isn't like no matter what you will die. You can actually block the attack and then just leave the guy with absolutely no super meter and just fuck him up totally. But it's an interesting thing that I haven't seen in a lot of video games, especially fighting games. Just an attack that will kill your opponent in one hit. And I have actually been using that quite a bit in the story mode, because in the story mode, all fights are one knockout victory. And there's a thing you can do called Burst, which essentially you just like kind of shoot out a bunch of power from yourself, which then anybody hits it. If you hit anybody with it, it fills up your super meter to full, so then you're able to just do the attack immediately. So a lot of the story mode fights were just kind of Burst, I win. Yeah, and it always uses this really cool animation where I'm pretty sure, like, actually Yosuke, one of the characters, does Maximum Spider from Marvel vs. Capcom, if anyone knows what Maximum Spider is. And it's a bit weird to see that, but it's fun. And a lot of super attacks, they use, like, Quarter Circle Forward and stuff, but, like, one or two characters have, like, a charge where you have to, like, hold it back and then just hold the stake in one direction, then move it in the opposite direction, and then attack. Which, I don't like those characters at all. I don't like charge characters. But yeah. It's a fun game. I like it. The art style is actually interesting, because so it's developed by Arc System Works, and I always thought Arc System Works did, like, essentially interactive anime, where you're able to just control anime characters and do all that stuff. Like they look like hand-drawn sprites. But this is actually just full-on just sprites.
That's awesome.
Like the environments and everything look all polygonal and shit, but the actual character models are sprites, which I didn't expect, because a lot of stuff that I'd seen previous to the game's launch was all like, hey, so we got these anime models, fight with them. But no, they're sprites, and it looks awesome. It's a Persona 4 Arena. It's fun. I really like it.
Yeah, I feel I should briefly talk about my experience with this game. Because I never, like, brought it home or anything. I played it against some other people who had no idea what they were doing, so it was basically button mashers against button mashers. And then I played against the guy who owned the game, who is, like, incredibly good at it. But he's... I don't know if you've ever met one of these people who's, like... They devote their lives to fighting games, and they're really, really good at fighting games, and they do all the awesome combos, and you'll never stand a chance against them.
Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
But they act like they're not good at all. To a point that it's patronizing. Like, this guy owns Street Fighter 4 fighting pads, right? So obviously he's devoted a good deal of time to the game. So I'm just starting off, I'm like, I'm not very good at fighting games. He's like, oh, don't worry, I'm not either. Kills me in a single combo. It's like... after actually saying that he's going easy on me, it's like, dude, settle down.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I know that feeling, dude. But one thing that, what's even worse than that is actually being like, not great, but not terrible at the game. And then having somebody who's never played it before just totally whip your ass. Whenever I played Street Fighter 4 with an aimless one, I always hated it, because he always just chose one guy and it started spasming on the sticks. So I just play with, like, game pads. And so he just starts, like, spasming on them while watching something else on Netflix, and then totally whoops my ass. Which is why I like playing Mortal Kombat with him, because you couldn't do that shit in Mortal Kombat.
No, you couldn't.
And I whooped his ass at that. So yeah, Persona 4 Arena. I do like it. I'm hoping that I'll be able to get someone to actually play it with me, because I want to try out, like, multiplayer stuff with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like local multiplayer, because I don't have Xbox Live Gold.
Oh.
Yeah, and just for everyone out there knows, I'm thinking of maining Chie and having like my secondary character be Akihiko, because they're both pretty good. They're both Chie is specifically a physical fighter, using power charge, which ups her like physical strength. And using, like, mainly just physical attacks. And then Akihiko is also physical, but he also has, like, lightning abilities. So I'll probably be playing as those two. But one thing, because just one last thing I want to talk about with this. So in this game, they have included three characters from Persona 3, which is another game that I spent a good amount of time with. So we have Aegis, who is a robot designed to be a weapon to fight shadows, which are things in the Persona series. Then we have a Mitsuru, who is one of the main characters, who's another main character from Persona 3, who uses a rapier and fights with ice shit. And then we have Akihiko. And my question is, where's Kodomaru? Where's the dog who fought with fire? When I saw this game and I saw the Persona 3 characters that were in it, I wanted Kodomaru. I wanted a dog that shot himself in the head in order to summon his Persona. Because in Persona 3, in order to summon your Persona, you had to shoot yourself in the head.
An efficient tactic.
Yeah. It was a bit weird. Like in the opening cutscene for Persona 4, we actually just see a girl, like, trying to summon a Persona, but we don't know she's trying to summon a Persona, so it just looks like she's trying to kill herself, but is too afraid to do it. And then when, like, the main character shows up and he ends up getting into a fight with a shadow, he just sees the gun lying on the ground. No one, like, doesn't hear a voice in his head saying, use the gun. He just picks it up and shoots himself in the head. He's just saying, okay, fuck this, I'm done.
That's some bravery right there.
Or he just didn't want to die at the hands of some weird fucking monster thing. Persona 4, Arena. It's good. I like it.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, it's really fun. So, moving on. Bobby, what have you been playing?
Okay, I got a couple things to talk about. One of them's very silly. WWE 2013.
Why, dude?
Because...
character customization.
Actually, that's the big thing for me, is like... it's not the actual gameplay. I don't like the actual gameplay that much. What I like is your ability to alter the universe, and like, you can actually change a lot. Like, you can add titles, you can change sort of how the universe is built. One of the big things I've been doing, because it's Star Child's game, and I just play it at his place from time to time, but we've been working on basically restoring the divas to a respectable status.
Okay, how so?
Well, by allowing them to have proper title matches, giving them all match types, giving them new respectable titles, stuff like okay. that. As much as we can do.
Yeah, I mean, there still is so wrestling.
Yeah, of course. It's just that stuff like that I enjoy doing.
Okay, Bovie,
otherwise, it's a wrestling game. I meant the altering of their universe, altering their storylines and sort of affecting how they do things.
So Bovie enjoys Duke the Divas.
God damn it.
Yeah, so
moving on from that, I've played a little bit more Mass Effect. Not a huge amount, though. But I realized, like, just how much talking you have to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of talking in those games.
Which but I enjoy, it's honestly, building. But... yeah. And I talk to everybody.
As you should.
Yeah.
It's an RPG, dude. You gotta talk to everybody.
But something new I have played is the multiplayer for Halo 4.
Okay. Was it Halo multiplayer?
It was Halo multiplayer. Mostly, it's not as good as previous Halo multiplayers.
What? I thought it
was.
Well,
there was a few things I didn't appreciate. Like, the Mantis. I hate the Mantis.
Okay, what's the Mantis again? Like,
that's the mech. It's so, like, just overpowered.
Okay. Mm.
And dumb.
The Mantis
dumb
is OP.
Face. And that was, even what I was using, like, I got into a Mantis that someone abandoned because it was, like, nearly blown up. I still killed, like, 7 people before I died. in that thing, and I'd played the multiplayer. It was like my third game in. Overall, it's mostly the same, though. Like, it's mostly the same as other multiplayers. I don't think it's added too much. The customizable loadouts are kind of cool.
Okay.
I don't The other thing I didn't like was the infection game mode.
Okay, that's the zombie one, right?
Yeah. Just because the way the zombies move in this one make them pretty hard to kill, and you can't kill them with a headshot straight up.
Okay.
Yeah.
It takes a few, which I think you should always be able to kill a zombie with a headshot.
Yeah, it's kind of the golden rule of zombies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so
those are my only annoyances.
Fuck that noise.
Those are my only annoyances. Otherwise, I like the online. It's pretty well set up.
Okay.
Customization is limited when you start off, and overall a bit limited. I also play Griffball, though, and Griffball is still really fucking fun.
Yeah.
Oh, Griffball, it's been so long. So long.
Also, just to see what it was like, I played the demo for the Minecraft Pocket Edition.
How was that?
It's pretty terrible.
Oh.
As one would Minecraft expect from the Pocket Edition of Minecraft.
Minecraft is not meant to be played on a touchscreen device, okay? It's that simple. I don't see how that sold...
I don't think most games are meant to be played on a touchscreen device.
Some
I don't
are.
See how that sold more than the Xbox 360 edition. I just don't get it.
Because more people have smartphones than they do Xbox 360s.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it has a demo, right? So, you can download the demo and see how terrible this game is before buying it.
The people who bought Minecraft on their phones don't know a quality game when they see one. It's like, oh, what's this Minecraft thing I heard about? I'll buy it, punk. And then
that's it. That's all they know about Minecraft, and they associate it with
Yeah, it's like, I'm not a gamer. It's like, okay, what are you doing then? I'm playing Minecraft.
Like, let's go over the features you may have enjoyed of Minecraft, which you will not see in the Pocket Edition. The crafting table.
So they took out half of... So they took out something that was half the name of the game?
Yeah, you can, well, crafting is just sort of done from your inventory now. So, like, I guess they decided there's no more need for the crafting table. And because that would make the controls too hard. Oh, being able to click the freaking blocks you want.
Yeah.
Aiming well. Tools breaking. That's actually a good realism element that's gone. Is you don't have to build your tools anymore. They just give you the tools. They also give you some blocks infinite in survival mode, which is not right.
Maybe they just did that for the demo.
No.
No.
Just no.
Just no.
Blanket statement.
I could say it would have made no sense to do so for the demo.
I know,
you wouldn't be representing the game right, so it's possible that it's different, but I'm gonna guess not.
Yeah, maybe that's why they actually did that. They just, like, the actual game that you pay the money for is actually just full on Minecraft, but the demo is just infinite everything, and, like, to sucker people in. Like, the people who don't want to know what Minecraft is. You go, what's this Minecraft thing? Oh, they give you fucking everything. Let's do this.
No.
Because, you know, mobile gamer...
You can get the infinite stuff by going into creative mode. That's the point of creative mode.
Yeah.
Like, in Minecraft 360, I have this world that I've been working on creative, which actually, Onsis and I were working on stuff in there together before, and we still have a building we have to finish.
I know. We will do that.
And, like, I've done all sorts of crazy shit with that world, but, like, it's not a survival world. It's my creative world. Although I might play survival in there at some point, it'd be pretty easy, because I've already got, like, 3 towns, infrastructure set up between them, including a minecart system that can operate with or without a person in the cart. Nether transport system. But, like, infinite blocks, that's what creative mode is for.
Yeah, not survival.
Survival
But at least, at least you're able to, like, place blocks around and, you know, do things.
Yeah, if you could place the freaking blocks right.
What's wrong with placing the blocks?
I'm talking about the Pocket Edition.
Yeah, I know.
It's difficult with the touchscreen to get everything in just the right space. Even digging can be hard. You accidentally dig in wrong spots. And
yeah.
So, yeah. Like, I just think it'd be frustrating to try and build anything, like, intricate in the Pocket Edition. So I wouldn't bother with it.
Okay.
And I actually think that's it for my gaming.
Okay. Well, what have you been playing?
Well, I haven't really been playing much lately. Just Super Mario Brothers Wii U.
Okay.
That's an amazing game. Well, I guess it's like the main reason why I like it is everything is so smooth and, you know, like physics and the animations, like they look really good, and it like looks like an old Super Mario game. You know, like it's not. You know, they're not trying to do anything different or anything.
It's not polygonal.
Yeah, like, it isn't... as much as I like Super Mario 64, I want to see more games like that. And, like, what do you call it? Like, Super Mario Sunshine. I thought those were good games. Just because, like, you were able to explore in a Mario world. And, you know, everything was 3D. But... the way this game is designed, it's amazing. Like, you're basically just doing the same thing. You're Mario saving Princess, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But to me, it's all about the design of the levels and, like, just how nostalgic everything feels, like, just while you're playing it. And all the new, like, I guess... power-ups you're able to get, like, you're able to get this, acorn thing that turns you into, like, a squirrel, like, a flying squirrel Mario.
Yeah, squirrel suit.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Sorry, that is a Tanuki raccoon suit.
Yes, well, I didn't really...
This new one isn't. It's a flying squirrel suit.
It's not a Tanuki suit?
No, the Tanuki suit you get from the feather. No, the Tanuki suit you get from the raccoon. Wait, how do you get the Tanuki suit again? I can't remember that.
With a
from
feather?
The feather.
Feather. No, I thought the feather was a superhero cave. No, that's not. No. Well, okay. So, yeah, you get the Tanuki suit from the feather. You get the flying. You get the flying squirrel suit from an acorn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an entirely different suit.
Yeah.
So now, like, PETA has more to piss and moan over.
Oh yeah, they are. I'm surprised they haven't already made a game parodying this.
Yeah. But anyways, like, it's such a good game. Like, the landscape, especially in the overworld, you know, you just you know, it's like a Super Mario Party or blah, a Mario Party board game, essentially.
Yeah, it's a map screen.
Yeah.
Like all old Mario games.
Well, there's something a little different. Like, I mean, it looks like old Mario games, but like it just has that different style and feel about it.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, I like the fact that it's fast paced and, you know, I'm just able to, I guess, parkour in Mario. That's what I always loved about it.
Parkouring.
Yeah.
That's something I never thought I'd hear be. That's something I never thought I'd hear
associated with
this.
A video game.
No,
what?
No, I never thought like parkour. I know there are parkour in games, but Mario.
Do you know what parkour is?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's free running and shit, but Mario. He.
Look at what Mario is. It's a jumps. Platforming. Yeah.
He doesn't climb anything.
But he runs. He jumps over obstacles.
Running and jumping. So hurdlers are parkour people.
Absolutely, man. Have you ever parkoured?
I can't even run.
Okay. Well, I guess we're off to a good start with this. I don't know. Like, it's a fun game. Like, don't judge me.
I'm not judging you for saying it's a fun game.
You're judging me for, like...
I'm judging you for describing Mario as a parkour guy.
Yeah. Well, he does, like, I don't want to explain myself.
He runs and jumps.
It's amazing.
Parkour people do more than run and jump.
Not really.
Yeah, they climb, they do other fancy shit, they slide.
Well, yeah, but if you think about it, the point is from getting from A to B. Yeah. That's the whole point of parkour.
So this is also the same point of walking.
Absolutely. But running.
Again, getting from point A to point B.
Ah, this is stupid.
Yes, it is. You brought it up. Moving on.
That's irritating. Don't do that, man. Anyways, what else have I been playing? Well, I've been playing Terra. I just created a character, and I'm really liking the control scheme. It's so good. Like the graphics are clean, and you know, like everything's just well rendered.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm like sick at the moment. I'm not feeling very well.
This is a really enthusiastic podcast.
Well, yeah. No, I just I don't know.
A lot of dead air.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've been playing like a lot of Halo 4 as well. Basically just on and off. I don't know. I find the competitive edge a lot more rewarding in Halo 4.
Okay.
Yeah, like being able to just yeah. Fuck you, man.
What? You just left?
The shit?
Okay then, I guess on to news?
I guess.
Yeah, Onsius just left. Okay, so first up in news, Shazam, the superhero formerly known as Captain Marvel, has been added to the Injustice Gods Among Us roster. So this was revealed through the Battle Arena, which is a new promotional thing that WB and NetherRealm are doing. It's actually pretty cool. So what they do is every week they'll post two 1v1 fights, pitting two people against from the roster against each other. And then they would put up voting. So the first week was Batman versus Bane and Wonder Woman versus Harley Quinn. Then the people who visit the site were able to vote on who they wanted to win. Then the winner, based on popular vote, would then win and move on to the next bracket. And what's also and whoever won will also got a there's also like a in-game fight video showing how the fight would progress using in-game footage. And then the winner would be decided there. And it was actually pretty awesome. So yeah, that was the first match. So the first week was Batman versus Bane, Harley Quinn versus Wonder Woman. And then the second week's matches were posted up with Lex Luthor versus the Joker, and then the Flash versus Shazam. I can't talk. Yeah, so Shazam is now in the game. For those who don't know, Shazam is really a kid named Billy Batson. I'm pretty sure he's like 12 or something. So he was living on the streets, and then a wizard showed up and said, "Hey, I'm going to give you some powers. You will be my champion." So then every time the kid says Shazam, he turns into a superhero, with Shazam being an anagram of what his powers were. He has the wisdom of Solomon, the strength of Hercules, the stamina of Atlas, the power of Zeus, the courage of Achilles, and the speed of Mercury. Which I'm pretty sure the last one's out of place, because all the other ones, I'm pretty sure they're Greek and Mercury is Roman. I think in like the Greek mythology, like Mercury's counterpart was Hermes.
Something like that.
Yeah, but anyway, the guy is basically a magical version of Superman. Like he's as strong as Superman, but he's just magic powered and not powered by the sun.
Right.
Yeah, so he's been added to the game, and it's also been seen in one of the fight videos, specifically the Wonder Woman versus Harley Quinn one, that some of the characters, like some of the villains from Batman Arkham Asylum or Arkham City, are actually going to be stage hazards in the game. There's a bit where Wonder Woman punches Harley Quinn through a door, and she goes flying in. She runs into Killer Croc, Penguin, Two-Face, and Riddler, and they beat the crap out of her before throwing her through another door to lead onto the next half of the stage. Yeah, this is something that they've done in previous like Mortal Kombat games. Like one I remember that it was in was like MK versus DCU, fittingly. Where if you hit the person at the right place, they'd like fly off the stage and move to another part of the stage. So they were still keeping it within the actual stage, but having a new stage within that stage, which is actually pretty cool. So I can't wait for this game. I'm fucking excited. So Injustice Gods Among Us is set for release on April 16th for the PS3, 360, and Wii U. On the article that I wrote for this, you can actually find the videos for Batman vs. Bane and Harley Quinn vs. Wonder Woman to see who won. So yeah. Moving on to our next piece of news. Naughty Dog has said that they will not be toning down the violence in their upcoming game, The Last of Us.
Good on them.
Yeah, so with the recent stuff that's happening, like with the Newtown shooting and everything, people are looking at a game like The Last of Us where a 14-year-old girl is shooting dudes in the face and like beating them with bricks and shit and getting a bit uneasy about it. So in a recent interview, Neil Druckmann, the creative director of the game, was asked if the studio would be changing things like to react to these real-world events. And Druckmann said, "For us, everything in the game is necessary for the story. The reason Ellie is at that age and the violence is that brutal is because of what we're saying with the story. You have to buy into the conflict and desperation these characters live under. If you remove any of those elements, the story suffers. And that's why we would never do it." Yeah, good on him.
Yeah, they should absolutely keep the violence in there.
Yeah. Yeah, and Druckmann went on to say that there actually like were story reasons. He went on to like elaborate on some of the story elements that he was talking about. Because he said that Ellie grew up in this world. Like, the horrific acts of violence that happen in this like post-apocalyptic world, this is her everyday life. So having like that sense of morality within that character who has lived throughout this for most of her entire life that she can remember, it wouldn't make much sense. Which is why Joel is there, kind of, because they said that Joel actually acts as Ellie's morality and humanity. He remembers what happens before the apocalypse, and so he's trying to show her, you know, hey, you gotta survive in this, but don't be a sociopath about it. Which is good. I like that.
Really interesting story dynamic, having the older man be the conscience for the young girl.
Yeah, that's something I don't see every day.
Usually it's the other way around, but fuck that noise. We're doing it differently here, and I like
that. Yeah, the girl's in the foreground on the box art, bitch. Yeah, like, whenever I'm going through, like, my news feeds, I am constantly looking for news about The Last of Us, because every other news story that I read about them is awesome.
It seems like I will need to play this game.
Yeah, it's like every other news story is about them trying to keep something the same with their game and not change it to something that would hurt the game, hurt the final product in the end. Meanwhile, every other story is about the multiplayer pre-order bonuses. So The Last of Us is set for release on May 7th for the PS3. So, 3 years after this game came out, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game, has still not seen its final piece of DLC released. So the DLC is the Wallace Wells is the online multiplayer plus Wallace pack, which adds online multiplayer to the game and also gives you the playable character of Wallace Wells, Scott's awesome gay roommate. So this piece of DLC was actually originally supposed to come out, like, I think back in 2010, like when the game actually came out. But it's been delayed. And delayed. And delayed. And so Major Nelson, in a blog post, said that the add-on pack would be coming to XBLA. actually this Wednesday. The pack would be adding the online play of the Wallace Wells, and it would run you about 400 Microsoft points, so about $5. But then, a couple days before the DLC pack was supposed to come out, February 5th. It's come out last Wednesday. But then, on the 4th, Ubisoft sent an official statement to Destructoid saying, The downloadable content for Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game, has been delayed for fine-tuning and to incorporate feedback from the passionate Scott Pilgrim community. Ubisoft is addressing feedback from the community on the best ways to honor retro games in the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the game DLC, in an accurate and respectful manner. Ubisoft, the new team developing the DLC, respect creative properties and, of course, want to be sure to deliver an experience that is a proper tribute to the Scott Pilgrim franchise. So, yeah. Delayed the DLC yet again. For bullshit.
Pretty Yay. Much. It's just... When you're delaying a DLC for that long and you say the reason is you want to keep the fans happy, it's like saying that your dog ate your homework.
Yeah. It's like the go-to excuse when you can't think of a better one. Moving on to our next piece of news, the next two pieces of news have to deal with movies. So, Duncan Jones, the director of Moon and Source Code, has signed on to direct Legendary Pictures' live-action adaptation of the MMO World of Warcraft. So, the studio is looking to start production in the fall and is shooting for a 2015 release. The script for the movie is being written by Blood Diamond scribe Charles Leavitt. And we don't know anything about the story. Excuse me. Legendary is keeping Leavitt's script under tight wraps, so we don't know anything about it. And we don't know anything about casting either. But some people over the tracking board are reporting a rumor that Warner Brothers is actually eyeing Johnny Depp to star in the movie. We don't know if this is actually true because they haven't been able to find another source to corroborate it. But I thought it was something worth mentioning. So, moving on. DICE happened sometime back, a few days ago, actually. Yep. And J.J. Abrams and Gabe Newell were up on stage. While there, they announced that they were looking into a way to make either a Portal or Half-Life movie.
I act shocked.
Yeah, the movies, if they do end up happening, the movies would be produced by Abrams and his Bad Robot production company. But the idea for this is still in the very early stages of development. So we don't know if Abrams will be working, actually directing the movie, or if he'll just be working in the producer capacity. But, yeah, this may be happening. Which, it's kind of weird that J.J. Abrams and Gabe Newell would decide to make movies where the protagonists of both of them don't talk.
Yeah, and that kind of works for Portal, because Chell can't talk.
Yeah, but I can't imagine a Portal movie working well, because one of the big things of Portal is actually, it is the humor, but it's also, actually solving the puzzles.
They'd have to be very creative with Portal. I think if they did Half-Life, they'd just have to make Gordon Freeman talk. It would piss off some fans, but...
It would piss off everybody.
It wouldn't piss me off.
I'd get a bit indignant about it.
There's a reason for putting a silent protagonist into a game. It helps the gamer project themselves onto the protagonist. Makes sense. But in a movie, the protagonist is being portrayed. They have their own character. So you don't need to keep them silent because you don't need to have the audience put themselves onto a character in a movie.
Yeah, but that's one of the things.
As much as it's important in a game.
But from listening to anything that I've heard from Half-Life fans, that's one of the things that made Half-Life so great, was that you were able to project yourself onto Gordon Freeman and have him be whatever character you want him to be. Anybody who watches this movie will be so pissed off because that's not their Gordon Freeman. Yeah. Actually, Punchatron, our senior anime and manga correspondent, actually said his own two-piece in the thing, actually was pretty good. So he said, let's face it, a Portal movie would be awful. Despite the amazing character design, the story isn't exactly a masterpiece, and the games were/are fun because of the puzzle solving. a movie about a mute girl running through 20 slightly different rooms solving puzzles while an AI passive-aggressively insults her is not what people want in a movie. I think the best we can hope for is a passing mention or two of Aperture Science in a Half-Life movie.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't know exactly what they could do to make a Portal movie work, but it's potentially possible. They would just have to get really creative with it.
Yeah. So, moving on to Crypto News.
I have to point out that there's a little bit of added news on there that J.J. Abrams will be working with Valve on a game.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, and they haven't said what game it is. I hate to break it to everybody, but it's probably not Half-Life 3.
Yeah. Yeah, so, moving on to our next piece of news. Ouya, the Kickstarter-funded Android-powered video game console, is up for pre-order. So, it was being sold on Amazon, GameStop, Best Buy, Target. The pre-orders went up last Tuesday. And the consoles will be available in retail in June of this year. The consoles are selling for about $100. The controllers will run you about $50 if you're gonna buy them separately. And yeah, I'm pretty sure the console actually comes with one. I was excited for when the Ouya was originally announced because it sounded really cool. But now I'm just kind of blah on the whole thing.
You know, one of the big things that happened that changed that was is now I've got an Android phone.
Yeah.
And like it's starting to be that everybody has them because they just come with every plan. So like, and I have OnLive on my computer, so Ouya is starting to fail to offer me things.
Yeah. Yeah. So then moving on to another piece of Ouya news. Excuse me. So Julie Ehrman, who is the CEO of Ouya, spoke to Joystick at DICE, saying that the company will iterate every year and release a new Ouya console.
A year?
Yeah. So Ehrman says, as it relates to iterating the console and refreshes, our strategy is very much similar to our mobile strategy. There will be a new Ouya every year. There will be an Ouya 2 and an Ouya 3. We'll take advantage of faster, better processors, take advantage of prices falling. So if we can get more than 8 GB of flash in our box, we will. And in doing so, make sure that all games are backward compatible. So Ehrman said that the games will be tied to Ouya user accounts, meaning that if you do go out and buy like a new Ouya every year, then all your content will transfer over to it, like including your saves. So that'll be nice. But seriously, a new Ouya every year?
Honestly, I think that there's probably going to be a lot of people like us who were like really excited when the Ouya was announced, but by the time it came out, it's like, it's not so appealing now.
Yeah, it's like, no thanks, I'll just use my phone.
So, honestly, I don't know if they'll have the sales to support a new Ouya every year.
Yeah, it's kind of, like, all the games in there they say will be free to play, so I'm guessing this is like their subscription fee to keep the company afloat, so they'll just release one every year, and hopefully people keep like paying like yearly subscription fees of $100 to use the Ouya. It'd be weird. Anyway, so moving on to our final piece of Ouya news, Double Fine's Kickstarter game, which is currently known as the codenamed Reds, will be coming to the Ouya. That's it, really. Moving on. So, The Witcher 3 has been announced. The Witcher is a series of RPG games for the PC, which I have the first of, and I haven't actually gotten a chance to play it, like, get too deep into it yet, because it's a weird, really Russian game. Mainly because it has just so much shit in it. There are different stances for fighting different types of opponents. There's different sorts of fighting, like monsters or humans. There's like spells, potions, using like dodging out of the way of stuff. It's so fucking deep and just in depth with everything that's doing, and it's weird. But anyway, so The Witcher 3 has been announced, and they have revealed some things about it, such as the world is supposedly 20% bigger than Skyrim's. It'll take you about 30 to 40 minutes to cross the world on horseback. It'll be using new streaming technology, the CD Red Engine 3. Geralt will have his memories back, because I guess he was an amnesiac in the first two games. There'll be no chapters or acts. Geralt is done fighting for everyone else. He's just going to be fighting for himself. It'll have everything from solving mysteries to slaying monsters. And it'll be coming out on all top-of-the-line consoles, including next-gen.
Okay.
Yeah, so this was originally announced through Game Informer, and that and the thing has actually, Game Informer has actually finally come out with a proper announcement. With a report saying, quote, "It's 30 times larger than the previous game, an enormous setting even larger than Skyrim's vast expanse, made possible with the new Red Engine 3 technology that developer CD Projekt Red is debuting at the game." So yeah. I am at some point going to be getting deeper into The Witcher, because I honestly do want to. What I've heard, it looks really interesting. But for now, I'm kind of just blah on the whole thing again. So, moving on to our next piece of news, as soon as I find other news. There we go. Okay. So, The Astronauts, a new studio headed by Adrian Chimérez, who's the former creative director of People Can Fly, and one of the guys, one of the people behind Gears of War Judgment, Bulletstorm, and Painkiller, have announced a new game. So the game is called The Vanishing of Ethan Carter, and is slated for release on PC sometime this year. So the game supposedly takes inspiration from like early 20th century macabre fiction. And according to the press release, the game is meant to be, quote, played at night, alone, and in headphones.
A lot of games are better like that.
Yeah, so the player will be taking the role, put into the role of a detective who has magical abilities and shit, which allow him to mentally recreate crime scenes. You're going to be put on the trail of a boy who is kidnapped, presumably that's Ethan Carter, and you'll discover the body of one of his kidnappers, which has been mutilated. More corpses start popping up, and mystery deepens as you discover the ancient force that holds sway over the region. The game will be using Unreal Engine 3, and said something about the game. He said, "What we care about most is that the players feel like they are really there. Immersion is our number one priority. It's a game about exploration and discovery. We're not abandoning the gameplay. On the contrary, we're trying to strip it down to the bone and make sure it's always meaningful and truly makes the experience better." So yeah, I really like this developer, mainly because their People Can Fly. Like Bulletstorm was fun. Painkiller is awesome. I haven't played Gears of War Judgment. I might play Gears of War Judgment. I don't know. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this game. So moving on to our next piece of news. Ubisoft has announced that the next Assassin's Creed game will not feature Connor in it at all.
Good, because it sounds like a lot of people didn't like him.
I don't. Just fucking boring and dull. So Ubisoft made this announcement sometime last week during a earnings call, revealing that there was another game in development and that it was scheduled for release in the next fiscal year, which ends in March 2014. And it also has been announced that the game will take place in a new time period too. I don't think it's actually been announced what time period it'll be in yet, but cool.
Yeah, they keep going forward. I pretty much expect that by Assassin's Creed 7, they're going to be like, you're actually another dude plugged into an Animus reliving Desmond's memories of being plugged into the Animus.
Bwong. Yeah, so moving on to our series of news. Square Enix has announced their next game, which is going to be coming out for the PS3, 360, and PC, called Murdered Soul Suspect. So this was originally announced through a teaser website that had a bunch of mysterious images on it that were picked up by sites like Joystick and VG247, which had then been all collected together, and now see some things. So what we know about the game so far is Murdered Soul Suspect is an exciting new game for Square Enix, which challenges players to solve possibly the hardest case of all. I'm guessing it's your own murder.
Something like that, but that is a bit cliched.
Yeah. So VG 24/7 discovered a URL, which contained an image, and a message. The message read, "Detectives aren't supposed to get bloody knuckles, but I've done a lot of things I wasn't supposed to do. I've lived through it all. The beatdowns, the backstabbings, disrespect most people. Disrespect most people wouldn't see in 10 lifetimes, and I never lost a fight. Until now." So yeah, and there's been one image released so far of a guy in the street dead with a shadow over him, a person. So, yeah. Adventure, ho! So yeah, moving on to our next piece of news. Activision has announced that in 2013, there will be a new Call of Duty game. What a shock. Right.
I'm probably not going to play it. I pretty much stopped at Modern Warfare 2.
Mm. Yeah, so Activision Publishing CEO Eric Hirschberg said, "The Call of Duty franchise continues to set the bar for innovation, and we expect the new Call of Duty game in development for 2013 to raise the bar even higher. There's increased volatility this year due to the ongoing console transition, which makes predicting the future more challenging than during normal years in the cycle for Call of Duty. Consistent with our past practices, we are planning the mainline release in Q4 to be down versus 2012. So yeah, that's basically saying that he is not expecting the game to be as good, to not sell as good as Black Ops 2, which actually broke records. Yeah, so moving on to our next piece of news. NVIDIA is offering free-to-play game credit if you buy video cards. Excuse me. So, for people who buy the GeForce GTX 650 or 650 Ti, you'll get $25 of in-game currency for World of Tanks, Hawken, and PlanetSide 2. If you buy the GeForce GTX 660 and up, you'll get $50 of in-game credit for each of the, for also those titles. The deal is currently active in North America, Europe, the Middle East, Africa, and India at participating retailers. So, Slender the Arrival is going to be coming out soon, I believe. Yeah, March 26th. And if you pre-order the game now, you'll get early access to the beta. So, I'll be posting a link to the pre-order page on the site, but you can pay anywhere from $5.18 Canadian dollars to $62.10 Canadian dollars. If you pay the $5.18 one, you'll be getting a download copy of the game on release as well as access to the beta test today. I'll just go through them all. So then, if you pay $10.35, which is the regular retail price, you get the same as a pre-order discount, but you're feeling more generous. If you pay $15.53 Canadian, you will get the soundtrack edition, which is the downloaded copy of the game, access to the beta, and a downloaded copy of the game's soundtrack on release day. If you pay $25.88, you'll get everything that was mentioned previously, plus 5 downloadable high-resolution paintings from the game. If you pay $62.10, which is the producer's edition, you'll get everything listed above, plus a special thank you with your name listed in the game's credits, alongside the developers. Yeah. So looking at this thing, it looks like the prices in American dollars are 5 to 60. So I guess it's like $5, $10, $15, $25, $60. You know, damn you exchange rates. So yeah,
it's probably not even accurate to the current exchange rates, but
oh fuck no. Like I've looked some of this shit up. I'm pretty sure the Canadian dollar is actually worth more than the American dollar right now.
Yeah, a lot of times it is.
Yeah, but we always end up paying more.
Because the Americans control the companies that accept the payments.
Yeah. So the game will be available on March 26th, the PC, and I would be getting this game if I wasn't such a bitch. Like, I know James is going to be all over this shit. But whatever. So, moving on to next piece of news. So a little while ago, I reported that people who buy Gears of War Judgment in launch week will be getting a free copy of the original Gears of War. But if you pre-order through Walmart, you'll also be getting Gears of War 2 and 3.
That seems like a much better deal.
So yeah, like head over to Walmart, pre-order the game, you'll get the entire Gears of War series for the price of one game.
That sounds very reasonable.
Yes, it does.
Damn you, Walmart. You are evil, but you have such great prices and deals.
Yeah. So, from the looks of things, the game will be available on March 19th, I believe. And yeah. Also, if you pre-order through Walmart, you'll also be getting an exclusive classic Hammer Burst skin, I'm guessing. Which I believe is a weapon skin. So, yeah. Oh, actually, look at this thing. It's a choice bonus of Gears of War 2 or 3.
Oh.
Yeah, so you only get three quarters of the series if you pre-order through Walmart.
See, now that'd be frustrating. I just need one more!
Yeah, I already got everything I could out of Gears of War 2, so I'd probably go with Gears of War 3 because I haven't played that one.
Honestly, I wouldn't buy any of them. I don't much like the Gears of War games.
Yeah, they're very bro-ish. Yeah, so, moving on to our final piece of news. The Raspberry Pi computer, which is a miniature, $35 computer that's about the size of a credit card, can now play Minecraft.
Awesome.
Yep. So, Minecraft's Build-A-Majig is available for download on the Raspberry Pi blog with instructions there on how to set the game. So, yeah. That's cool. So the Pi edition
make Minecraft available on all platforms, no matter how terrible it is.
Yeah, so the Pi edition of Minecraft is available. It will be supporting for multiple languages, multiple programming languages, and can be yours for a grand total of free. So that is it for news. On to new releases. So coming out this week, the week of February 12th, we have Aliens Colonial Marines for the PS3, 360, and PC. I am not sure how I feel about this game. Bobby, how are you thinking about Colonial Marines?
I don't really have an opinion. I don't know that much about it. So, and it's in the Alien series, so never much paid attention to those games.
Yeah, it's weird, because there haven't been a lot of, just straight-up Alien games. There's always been Alien vs. Predator. And a lot of the games you're playing is the aliens. This one you're actually playing is just the Marines. And I am hoping there's someone in that game who goes, "This is a bug hunt, man. Game over. Game over." Because that'd be a great callback, and it would also play because it's a video game. What else coming out this week for the 360 and PC is Omerta: City of Gangsters. Ooh. Well, then coming out next week, the week of February 19th. We have Metal Gear Rising Revengeance for the PS3 and 360. Crysis 3 for the PS3, 360, and PC. And some other bullshit. Fantastic podcast, people.
Yeah.
We had one person drop out.
Sick and crap.
We had one person drop out, and everyone is sick and tired. I'm sorry about this, folks. You deserve better from us. Ugh, fuck. I need to sleep more.
Probably.
So anyway, if you manage to make your way through this, thank y'all for joining us. As always, you can follow us on Twitter. You can follow the site at DeathStarParods. I am at Deadman_DParods. We have at Bovimon and at Corey Ray with a W in the Ray. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/DeathStoreProds. Subscribe to us on YouTube at youtube.com/DeathStoreProdsVids for myself, youtube.com/Bovimon for Bovimon, and youtube.com/TheOnciest for Onciest. And you can subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some reviews, let us know what you want to see more of, etc. So if you go on the website, we're going to be having a new personal issues up on Wednesday. With Pudgetron, we'll be talking about some anime and shit. Then we'll be having the anime podcast on Thursday with Pudgetron, where, as well as the anime club, where this week we're going to be taking a look at Busuu Rankin. Then on Friday, we'll post our commentary track for Showgirls, which is another thing that we just fucking despised and almost slept through the entire time, because fuck. The movie's so boring.
And I was sick during that, too.
Yeah, this is a disease week here. Yeah. And then be sure to join us at 5pm Eastern at allgames.com/chat for the Anything Cast Live. We'd love to hear from you guys. So let us know what you guys think about what we're doing on the site, shows, whatever. Then we're going to be having comics on Wednesday, movies on Friday, as well as a commentary track for Jaws 4, The Revenge, to finally wrap up Worst Movies Ever Month.
Why do you come up with such terrible theme months, man?
I don't know. And hopefully that week I'll actually be releasing a new personal issues where I'll be taking a look at What's So Funny About Truth, Justice the American Way, and Superman vs. the Elite. So anyway, until all that stuff, I'm the Dead Man.
I'm Bovi1.
And for Onsius, we'll see you guys next time.